This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
We are in a verdict watch here at Crime Stories as we wait for the Sean Combs jury to hand down a verdict. Let's go straight to the courthouse, standing by Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter, host of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. What exactly happened?
Mark Agnifilo's closing argument had a much different style than the government's. He spoke to the jury kind of like he was talking to a friend. He really thanked them for their time. And his first really big statement here was, this case or this trial is the tale of two trials, told by the mouths of the witnesses, text messages, videos, and evidence. That's one trial. The second trial is different. The second trial is told by the mouths of the prosecutors. And he also went on to say that this case is so very badly exaggerated. What do you see from evidence? You see personal use of drugs. You see personal nights with girlfriends. Nothing else. And the prosecutors have charged this man with the most complicated charge on the books here, RICO. So he goes into a lot of different detail, and he goes out of order a bit with the charges. He went over the kidnapping predicate and then skipped over to the arson predicate before he finished the kidnapping predicate. So I think for some of us, it was a little tough to follow, but and really the points he was trying to make on a lot of these, for the kidnapping, for example, he really tried to disprove Capricorn Clark saying that Sean Combs had a gun. And he said, look, I'll give you five reasons why he didn't have a gun. And the biggest reason here is, why would he have a gun? Capricorn Clark didn't need a gun to go with Sean Combs. She said she had a crush on him. And he also said the biggest reason was actually because Kid Cudi on the stand testified that when Capricorn called him, she never said that there was a gun, and that would be really important. He also brought up the fact that she told Lauren London on the phone she wanted to escape the car, but she was scared of mountain lions. Not the gun, but mountain lions. He also went pretty hard on Cassie. He admitted the domestic violence. He said, yes, that is awful, and this was a regrettable action. I'm paraphrasing, but he also said, you know, if you're looking at this case, who's the winner here? Cassie's sitting on $30 million, and Sean Combs is in jail. He also said that Cassie really was Sean Combs' match, and that she knew what she was doing at certain times, like when she was dating Kid Cudi at the same time. He said, you know, Kid Cudi said that Cassie played us both, and that's that. Now, he also talked about the CERT team search, and he was extremely sarcastic in this, and he said, ooh, look at all the baby oil they seized. The world is a better place. The streets are safer because of all of this Astroglide. And the jury seemed to be laughing a bit and smiling here. What else? Oh, he talked about how the domestic violence that Cassie experienced at the Intercontinental Hotel. He actually said that, you know, this is a misdemeanor here. And the government actually had an objection to this during the break and said, yeah, they misstated the law. And Agnifilo said, look, all I'm trying to say here is that this is a state charge. This is not federal. Additionally, during the break, Maureen Comey did also raise two other issues she had besides misstating the law. She cited that there was a time during the kidnapping discussion that Mark Agnifilo looked at the jury and said, why would they charge him with this? Why would they do this? Well, Comey said he's not charged with kidnapping. This is a predicate act under RICO, and he misstated that. And also, she kind of said, you know, it's not the jury's job to surmise over what he was charged with. It's their job to decide whether or not that he's guilty. Mark Agnifilo said, you know, I think it's fair to that I am sarcastic. You know, I will tie everything together. But initially, the judge decided that he would give these instructions right when the jury returned, although Alexandra Shapiro argued that these instructions for the jury to disregard Mark Agnifilo asking them why the prosecutors charged Sean Combs with kidnapping. They asked that these instructions should be given after he's finished. However, the judge disagreed, Maureen Comey disagreed, and he gave them immediately when the jury returned. He said, I will give the charging instructions later. You follow what I say. You know, this is clearly, you shouldn't be prosecutor, basically the defense doesn't have the right to ask you why you think someone was charged. Again, he didn't say that, I am paraphrasing, but it was a moment. It did feel like he was getting scolded.
The trial that has taken weeks culminates with closing arguments.
Let's just revisit. What happened?
The raids by the feds, by HSI, Homeland Security investigators. Much of the PC probable cause was gleaned from multiple lawsuits filed against Combs. Now, that's not just from what we're learning. Combs' own lawyer spoke out in a very unfortunate statement for Combs. You never reveal your thinking prior to a trial, but the lawyer did. What are they saying, that all these victims are lying? I mean, think about it. No one wants to see the demise of a superstar, but are superstars to be held above the law? Because I say no. This is what we know happened. Listen to Sydney Sumner, Crime Online.
Large teams of law enforcement led by Homeland Security investigators raided three homes belonging to Sean Diddy Combs in Los Angeles and Miami as part of a sex trafficking investigation stemming from accusations leveled against Combs in five separate lawsuits brought against him. The latest suit, filed in February by music producer Rodney Lil Rod Jones, details frequent drug use, a shooting, and several accounts of sex assault while working with Combs on the Love album.
But there's more. And I can tell you this much. When the feds roll up in armored vehicles wearing Kevlar, that's not good for you. That's not good at all. We're hearing a lot of whining this morning by the defense about, oh, they messed up the inside of his house. Boo-hoo. Listen to Dave Matt, Crime Online.
In the 73-page document, Jones claims that Combs forced him to solicit sex workers and perform sex acts with them as Combs looked on. Jones also alleges the rapper threw parties he called freak-offs, during which underage girls and sex workers were given laced drinks and assaulted. Combs' son Justin, producer Stevie J, and associate Brendan Paul allegedly supplied the women and drugs for the parties. The suit goes on to say that Combs' access to major celebrities, athletes, and even British royals such as Prince Harry gave him and his followers legitimacy.
With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now, but first, straight out to Kayla Brantley joining us, investigative reporter, DailyMail.com. Kayla, thank you for being with us. Tell me what happened, because we saw simultaneous raids. A lot has been made of that. Hold on just a second, Kayla. Let me go to Nima Romani joining us, high-profile lawyer and, more importantly, former federal prosecutor, a president of the West Coast Trial Lawyers Association and author of Harvard to Hashtag. Nima, thank you for being with us. A lot has been made and a lot of whining and crying because there were multiple raids that went down simultaneously. Boo hoo. The reason that happens is so when you get raided in LA, you can't call your peeps in Miami and go, quick, 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 hide 1, 2, 3, and 4, destroy 5, 6, 7, and 8, and P.S. run for the hills as if you had seen a monster. That's why it's got to be very carefully orchestrated and timed, very organized to go down at the same time for that very reason, Nima.
Well, Nancy, that's exactly right. And the raid in Los Angeles took place about a mile from where I'm sitting right now. I live close to Diddy's home. And, you know, I also know Aaron Dyer. I used to work with him. I respect him. But I think he's making that argument for the court of public opinion more than the courtroom. And you're right. There's three reasons why federal agents go in and they go aggressively. One, there's always a threat of violence. And Diddy reportedly has a lot of weapons. Agents need to make sure that no one flees the jurisdiction. evidence isn't destroyed. That's why the raids are executed simultaneously when they are. Individuals are removed from the home. They're cuffed. They're detained. No one was arrested. But Diddy was treated just like any other criminal defendant or target of an investigation when these search warrants are executed.
Guys, what do you expect? The HSI Homeland Security investigators to be the Minute Maid and clean up after a search? Yeah, that's not happening. Guys, it's amazing what people will do to hide contraband or evidence. What evidence am I talking about? I'm talking about videos, potential videos of underage girls and boys in the middle of sex acts. Now, number one, an underaged child. Some jurisdictions under 18, some under 16, some under 15, cannot consent to sex activity. So even if they appear to be willing in a video, does anybody remember R. Kelly, for Pete's sake, where he urinated on a teen girl? Yeah, that's not consensual. I don't care what she said at the time. Videos that could easily be hidden, even if they are in physical form, for all I know, they're just on a computer. That's why every computer, every laptop, every phone, every iPad, everything has to be seized.
Sean Combs arrested by the feds in a Lux hotel in the dark of night, now in federal custody. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
Today I'm announcing the unsealing of a 3-count indictment charging Sean Combs with racketeering conspiracy, sex trafficking, interstate transportation for prostitution. The indictment alleges that between at least 2008 and the present, Combs abused, threatened, and coerced victims to fulfill his sexual desires, protect his reputation, and conceal his conduct. As alleged in the indictment, to carry out this conduct, Sean Combs led and participated in a racketeering conspiracy that used the business empire he controlled to carry out criminal activity, including sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, and the obstruction of justice.
And we have just gotten our hands on the federal indictment. But first, let's talk about what went down in the dark of night. Sean Puffy Combs seen out on the street in New York just 30 minutes before feds break into his luxury suite at the Park Hyatt Hotel on 57th Street and arrest Combs and proceed to shred that hotel room, looking for evidence. Joining me right now at the hotel just outside the Park Hyatt is CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter Angelica Martinez. Angelica, thank you for being with us. Tell me what happened right there.
Yes, Nancy, we are currently outside the Hyatt Hotel, the Park Hyatt Hotel, where Sean Puffy Combs was arrested. He was arrested following an indictment that was returned by a grand jury.
Guys, joining us, Angelica Martinez at the Park Hyatt. We understand that feds, pursuant to warrant, went into Combs' room right behind you up on one of the penthouse levels and arrested Combs last night. He had no idea it was about to happen. We've also heard reports the arrest was to go down at least 48, if not 72 hours later, but something triggered the feds to make the arrest. Combs actually spotted out on the street and videoed BSing with fans and friends just before, literally minutes before the feds arrested him. I know they were poised outside the Park Hyatt Hotel where you're standing right now, Angelica, waiting for him to come back in with eyes on Sean Puffy Combs the entire evening, Angelica.
Yes, so apparently negotiations for Sean Combs' surrender had been in the talks for a while. And like you said, Nancy, something triggered this arrest. Something happened that caused them to move it from allegedly later in this week. He was allegedly arrested right in the lobby, and he was not expecting that, according to some sources.
Angelica, I think I know what may have prompted the early arrest. You know, you're about 20, 30 minutes from Teterboro, private airstrip. Combs has money. You can get on a private plane without
a passport. Now, where you can land without one is a whole nother can of worms. But if they got wind that he was leaving with all of his money and access to private planes, that's the time you make the arrest ahead of time. Joining me there at the Park Hyatt Hotel in the heart of Manhattan, Angelica Martinez. Let's open it up to the panel. And the last few moments, we caught the lawyer, the defense attorney, Agnifello, and he states his client is going to be released. Do you really believe that Sean Puffy Combs is going to get out on bond? Straight out to high-profile lawyer Nima Romani, former federal prosecutor, president West Coast Trial Lawyers, and author of Harvard to Hashtag. He is an expert in federal law. Nima, thank you for being with us. Quick question regarding bond. Now, we know that Combs was held overnight, and he is with the feds right now. You know his lawyer is going to make a big play for him to get out on bond and make a big show, probably walking along Park Avenue, maybe Fifth Avenue, wearing his fur coat as if he has it. A worry in the world. Why do I say that? Because when you don't know a horse, Nima, look at his track record. That has been his MO since the get-go. Hey, you raided my house? No problem. I'm out surfing, water sports with my family, living it up with some champagne. Yeah, that's him. That's his MO, to act like nothing is wrong and give the illusion of complete innocence and carefree.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
We are in a verdict watch for the Sean Combs jury to hand down a verdict. Let's just revisit what happened.
P. Diddy, we saw the video of you brutally beating and kicking and dragging Cassie, and now you apologize? Now? Apology not accepted. I'll see you in court.
It's so difficult to reflect on the darkest times in your life. Sometimes you gotta do that. I was f***ed up. I mean, I hit rock bottom. But I make no excuses. My behavior on that video is inexcusable. I take full responsibility for my actions in that video. I'm so sorry. But I'm committed to be a better man each and every day. I'm not asking for forgiveness. I'm truly sorry.
I don't know about you, but he looks like he's reading to me all that I'm sorry. Technical legal term, BS. He's not sorry he did it. He's sorry he got caught. Have you seen the video? Now, how is it at that time no charges were filed and you know hotel security saw the whole thing? Do you believe his apology? Is it not a day late and a dollar short? Well, apparently other people agree with me. Listen.
According to Ernest Owens, Sean Diddy Combs is only apologizing because he got caught. Owens calls Combs' apology another pathetic move, pointing out that Combs does not acknowledge Cassie Ventura by name or directly apologize to her. Combs has previously denied Ventura's allegations repeatedly, but this latest caught-in-the-act video has changed his tune. Owens says it is hard to take anything Diddy says seriously following several prior written attacks on his accusers.
Now, what written attacks are we talking about? I got to tell you something. There are a lot of criminal defense attorneys out there. This one will win your case. Ben Brofman. That's where you go when there's nowhere to go. Ben Brofman. He's representing Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy. Listen.
Cassie Ventura's lawsuit against Diddy includes a very specific event from March of 2016, where Ventura alleges that Diddy became extremely intoxicated and punched Ventura in the face, giving her a black eye. Diddy's lawyer, Ben Braffman, tells People in a statement that Combs vehemently denies these offensive and outrageous allegations and alleges that Ventura is filing the lawsuit after first demanding $30 million or she would write a book about their relationship. Braffman says Ventura is seeking a payday.
Now, remember, the lawyer is the mouthpiece for the defendant. The lawyer doesn't say anything that the defendant doesn't want said. So when you hear Braffman saying, oh, Cassie Ventura, she's just wants money. Nothing happened to her. This is BS. Yeah, no, we've seen the video and all of his denying and claiming. And remember, this is important. That's what he says about all the women that are claiming he abused them. They all want a payday. I don't believe that anymore. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. But first, straight out to Kayla Brantley, investigative reporter, DailyMail.com, on the case from the beginning. You know, I think this is just the beginning, Kayla, but bring me up to date as of right now.
Absolutely, Nancy. And as you said, Diddy's only apologizing right now because he got caught. Everyone sees right through that apology, including Cassie Ventura, who released a statement via her lawyer, who called Diddy's apology pathetic, essentially. He's saying that he's only, or Cassie's saying that he's only compelled to speak out now because of this damning evidence. And as you very well may know, that abusers, it's not just an isolated incident. We can assume that this has happened before. Cassie did speak about this exact incident back in her lawsuit from last fall. She said that there was an incident at a hotel where he came into the hallway, abused her, and that Diddy allegedly paid $50,000 to the hotel to get the video and for it to never be released. Obviously, now we know CNN has now had that video, released it to the world, which now compelled Diddy to apologize.
Kayla Brantley, I think you're exactly correct. Listen.
Cassie Ventura escaped Sean Combs by getting on the elevator at the Intercontinental Hotel, leaving the hotel and going to her own apartment. At her residence, she fears Combs will be even angrier at her for running away, so Ventura returns to the hotel, intent on apologizing to Combs. As she returns, hotel security staff urge her to get back in the cab and go home. They've seen the security footage of Combs beating Ventura and throwing glass vases at her in the hotel hallway. In her lawsuit against Combs, she claims he pays the hotel $50,000 for footage of the hallway assault.
Again, joining me in all-star panel, in addition to Kayla Brantley from DailyMail.com, straight out to Sam Dordulian, sex assault lawyer and former LA County sex crimes felony prosecutor, founder of the Dordulian Law Group. Sam, thank you for being with us. You know, before video was pervasive, no matter where you go, there's a camera on you. Very typically, the defense would say, you can't prove that. Now we have a video. So the fallback is, let's see, the video was doctored, the video was tampered with, or I'm sorry, I'm a different man now. I'm praying for forgiveness. I'm praying to be a better man. I got counseling. Really?
You know, what's disgusting, Nancy, is that's what you hear all the time, is that I'm sorry. But why did he have to go and attack the victim in this particular case? If he truly took responsibility for what he did, if he truly was disgusted, as he claimed in his video, his supposed apology, then why did he call her a liar in the public? Why did he say she's just looking for a payday? And only when he got caught, now all of a sudden he's sorry.
Joining me out of Florida, a high-profile private investigator, former Federal Task Force, U.S. Department of Justice, also with the DEA. Joining me, Robert Crispin from Crispin Special Investigations. Robert, I'm sure you, having dealt with this same scenario many, many times as a PI and with the feds, people pay off hotel staff all the time. And right now, the word we're getting from inside the Diddy camp is that they are fast and furious trying to make sure other video surveillance will not emerge. What about it, Crispin? How easy is that to do?
Well, you know, listen, money talks. And this is probably not the first time it's happened in his camp. And if you go back, there's the allegations of they paid $50,000 for the hotel security to get that video out there in LA. So I wouldn't doubt that they're fast and furious going after every single one of these allegations and every single one of these victims that they know of. They're back covering their tracks. It's an old trick. It's money talks, and people like money. So there's a lot of people that'll do some bad things to cover some bad things, sadly enough.
So you think it's relatively easy to pay off hotel security, or really any security, get rid of surveillance, it gets, quote, taped over, it gets lost, nobody can find it. It happens over and over and over again. But the kicker is, they are not at a hotel security office. They are not under the same duty as officers of the court. It's their private video. If they want to tape over it, they can, unless somehow they realize they're hiding evidence. And why would they tape over it if they didn't know they were doing it for a nefarious reason, Crispin?
Oh, it's tampering with evidence. Carte blanche, it's tampering with evidence. And anybody who gets involved in this case moving forward who already has knowledge, I mean, how do you not have knowledge of this case? And you find a prosecutor or law enforcement or an agent who can prove through text messages or undercover surveillances or anything that you paid somebody off to get a video, you're catching an obstruction charge. And you're doing and you're also catching a tampering with evidence charge. Now, back in 2016, when they got that video, none of this probably got reported yet. That's why they worked very fast and they threw $50,000 at these people to get that video, thinking it's not out there, thinking that nobody kept their own copy. And everybody keeps a copy of their own videos. Trust me.
To you, Kayla Brantley, joining us, investigative reporter, dailymail.com. 50 grand, that's like $10 to me. It's like nothing to Combs. I mean, what is his net worth?
Well, as Cassie said in the lawsuit, that the example of paying $50,000 was absolutely nothing to him. And it just shows his power and his influence. Now, reportedly, Diddy's a billionaire and he has so many different lines. He has Sean John, he has Revolt. And not only is he a music mogul, he's a fashion mogul and has been a legend in this industry. So his net worth is estimated around $1 billion. Now with all these legal blows, who knows how much it's going to go down to.
Combs allegedly planned and controlled the sex performances, which he called
freak off. Sean Puffy Combs spending the night behind bars and whining incessantly through his lawyers. We are analyzing evidence that has come out in court. You know what? After the judge heard this, he had a snowball's chance in H-E-double-L of getting bond. I mean, you got to know this. All the judges, they all have lunch together in a big room. Sometimes the law library, their court clerks are in there. They see each other day in, day out. How is this judge going to look at the other judges in the eye and go, yeah, I gave Diddy a bond. That was me in there because I don't have a spine. Now, listen to this. This is what I learned in court. Now, we've all seen the Cassie Ventura video of her running away from Sean Combs in public in a hotel corridor. He comes out practically butt naked, wearing nothing but a towel. He doesn't care. That doesn't bother him. So entitled. Chases her down and beats the H-E-double-L out of her, kicking her, kicking her, kicking her, dragging her. Listen to this. We have gotten a hold of, through prosecutors, texts that he immediately sends her. Listen to this. To Cassie, call me. The cops are here. I got 6 kids. Yo, please call. I'm surrounded. You gonna abandon me all alone? You're going to abandon me all alone? This, as we are learning that Cassie Ventura was running from a freak off. Yeah, there was a sex worker in the room with Diddy, and I guarantee he was trying to film it. The sex worker forcing Cassie to have sex. The defendant, according to prosecutor Emily Johnson, knew he had done something that could elicit police response. Well, that's a nice way of saying he getting busted, okay? So she texts back saying she still had horrible bruising from the assault. says, "I'm not a rag doll." Now, I want to point out that they are now, the defense attorney, desperate, is now saying Cassie Ventura was running away because she was jealous. She was jealous because she looked at Combs's phone and saw he texted another woman. Right. She's so jealous, she runs out barefoot trying to get away from him and the sex worker that was still in the room. Let's just start with that. Okay, what judge in his or her right mind can go sit down to his tuna fish sandwich and eat lunch with the other judges looking at him going, "Yeah, we know what you did. You let this a-hole out on bond." Listen to this.
Sean Combs is back inside the walls of Metropolitan Detention Center after U.S. District Judge Andrew Carter Jr. denied Combs' appeal of his remand. Magistrate Judge Robin F. Tarnowski initially denied the rapper's bail Tuesday, saying that Combs was a danger. Quote, "I don't know that you can trust yourself not to harm people." The defense proposed that Combs live at home, alone, in Florida, monitored by a 24/7 security team. Combs offered to give up any access to his cell phone or internet. In the end, Judge Carter Jr. agreed with Judge Tarnowski that, quote, "There is no condition or combination of conditions to ensure he will not obstruct justice or tamper with witnesses."
Music mogul and rap star Sean Diddy Combs hit with lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. But attorneys claim no matter how many suits are filed, Combs is innocent.
Innocent. Okay, he's getting paid plenty of money to say that, but the defense attorney is completely deluded. He is even claiming that Combs, Sean Combs, Diddy, has had to go into therapy because of the allegations made against him. Sean Combs is now the victim. Listen.
For a bail appeal hearing, Agnifilo submits an amended bail package. Combs agrees to have no communication with women outside of family members and the mothers of his children, to have no contact with known grand jury witnesses, referring to victim one, Cassandra Ventura, to use a private intelligence agency to monitor him 24/7. Sage Intelligence will ensure he has no cell phone or internet access, administer weekly drug tests, and turn over a daily visitor's log.
Are they crazy? With me is Irv Brandt, former senior inspector, U.S. Marshals Service. Those are the guys that go all around the world to bring back felons for trial or that have absconded. Author of a whole series of books about Solo, last one, Forever Solo, Night of the Dragon. Hey, Irv, really? They're going to have the same security guards protect Diddy that would take these women to hideouts so they could wait till their bruises healed before they went into public? The same ones that got sex workers from all over the world, the country, to come in and rape women that had been drugged on video? Those guys? And they're also going to perform weekly urine tests? You want to tell me they can't go take a leak in a cup and put the name Sean Combs on it? Really? Are they insane? Have you ever heard anything like this bond package?
I have not, Nancy. And it's not surprising that the defense was doing everything they could to convince the judge, because the burden shifted from the prosecution to the defense because of the nature of the charges and how much time that he was facing. So it's obvious that the defense was just coming up with anything that they could think of, any sorts of conditions that might convince the judge to release him on bond, and it just didn't work.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Verdict Watch. Let's just revisit the trial. What happened?
Diddy's $10 million defense starts this as we learn the jury is in fear of sitting on the Diddy trial. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
Cassie Ventura is set to take the stand, with prosecutors expected to highlight a 2016 hotel assault caught on video.
The This trial of Sean Combs started early in a Manhattan courtroom. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now, straight out to Lauren Conlon, joining us, co-host Pop Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Tell me about what happened first thing.
Court began with Diddy asking the judge for more water, or the judge said something like, "Do you have enough water?" And he said, "Could I have some more, Your Honor?" Diddy appeared to be wearing a light cream-colored sweater, which I thought was a great choice for a defendant. He had his glasses on. He was looking through some paperwork at the beginning of the morning, and he would turn around to smile at his mom and wave to his family who were in the front row. He gave a thumbs up at one point. I actually saw Janice Combs, his mother, in the lobby. She was wearing an all-black suit, a black purse, and she looked like she was going to a funeral, to be honest. I also want to point out that when the jury walked in, Diddy did not take his eyes off of them. He watched their every move.
This, as we are learning, the jury is actually in fear. In fact, the judge was afraid to impanel a jury on Friday, thinking they would back out with cold feet over the weekend. Listen.
The original plan was for jury selection to be completed on Friday, but Diddy's lawyers asked for a delay, raising concerns more jurors would get cold feet between Friday and Monday. The court received an email from one potential juror asking to be left off the panel for issues of personal well-being, according to the Combs team. Prosecutors strongly opposed the delay. Judge Arun Subramanian agreed with the defense.
Okay, to Eric Faddis, veteran trial lawyer, joining me out of the Denver, Colorado jurisdiction. Partner, Varner Faddis, elite legal former prosecutor. That's not good when the jury is afraid to be in the box, the jury box.
Yeah. I mean, this is a high profile case. There is a ton at stake. And Nancy, I'm sure you'll recall, the judge actually declined to give Diddy bond because there were concerns that he was engaging in witness tampering or witness intimidation. Those same concerns could translate to this jury, and it could cause them to get cold feet or otherwise be considering that when they're deciding the case, which is obviously a problem.
It wouldn't be the first time that a jury had been harassed, put in fear, or tampered with. Listen.
John Gotti earned the nickname Teflon Don after he was acquitted in multiple trials, likely due to jury tampering and witness intimidation. This seems to be confirmed when a juror who helped acquit Gotti in a racketeering case was convicted of taking a bribe. Jimmy Hoffa was also charged with unlawfully, willfully, and knowingly conspiring with six co-conspirators to influence members of a jury. He was accused of offering $10,000 to the families of two jurors for an acquittal vote and offering to get the police husband of another juror a promotion. Clarence Darrow was in the company of his chief investigator when the two men were arrested for bribery. Darrow was defending brothers on bombing charges. Police say Darrow's investigator passed $4,000 to a prospective jury member for a not guilty vote.
You would have to be living under a rock in a cave on the other side of the world not to know that there are allegations that Sean Combs ordered a hit, a murder, on Tupac Shakur. Listen.
Dwayne Keefe D. Davis claims credit for Tupac's murder on BET and in his memoir. He says Puffy Combs wanted Knight and Tupac's heads after their diss track Hit 'Em Up. When Davis offers to carry out the hits, Combs agrees to pay him $1 million. Davis, Anderson, Terrence Brown, and DeAndre Smith stake out the club where Shakur is performing, but Tupac's a no-show. Driving down the strip, they spot Knight and Tupac stopped in traffic. Brown flips a U-turn in their white Cadillac. Davis passes Anderson the gun, and Anderson leans over Smith to shoot Tupac.
We don't wipe the ass out quick, you know? It's nothing.
Who brought up the amount of $1 million?
He did.
Puffy did?
Yeah.
Biggie ever involved in any of these conversations about hitting
no.
Tupac?
Okay.
It's always just the Puff and Zip.
Yeah. This is all Puffy's doing. Yeah.
Straight out to Robert Crispin joining us, private investigator, former federal task force officer, US DOJ, also with DEA, now at Crispin Special Investigations. Crispin, thank you for being with us. You are staked out in front of Diddy's home there in Florida, where it all started with the bust. I want to hear how the neighbors are taking today, but more important, you think if this jury has seen the Cassie video and they all have an opinion on it? You think they don't know about the hit on Tupac Shakur?
Yeah, that's going to kind of tie it in, isn't it? And they're going to wonder like, boy, that's kind of interesting. But, you know, Nancy, I'm coming to you live out in front of Diddy's house here in Star Island in Miami Beach. And if today is any indication of what's going on in Diddy's world as his trial starts, it's a dark, rainy day. The neighbors, they're really happy that there's no more attention. There's no more late parties, 3-4 day benders, the drugs. In that white gate behind me, that's where the feds went in with their search warrant. That's where the drugs came out. That's where the electronic evidence came out. That's where everything started to unfold for Diddy before he got indicted.
I just find it very difficult to believe that if the jury has seen the Cassie video already, which they're going to see at trial anyway, that they don't know about the hit on Tupac Shakur. Which gets to my point, Crispin, that one juror backed out and said he was afraid for his own and his family's safety, got cold feet and wanted off the panel. And that's the one that would speak out. Have you ever had a case where jurors or witnesses were actually afraid?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a very real fear, because if he's found guilty, revenge is best served on a cold plate. And these people are going to be looking over their shoulder all the time. In drug cases in Miami, same thing. You want to sit there and look a drug lord in the eye and convict him when you have a wife, kids? These are everyday people that get jury subpoenas and end up sitting on these high profile cases. And there's a lot at stake when you hit either that guilty or that not guilty box on that jury form. That's an issue. And I would be afraid.
To Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, a high-profile psychoanalyst out of the L.A. jurisdiction, author of Deal Breaker. You can see her currently on Peacock and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, I think that the jury wants to do the right thing. I think in their heart of hearts, they want to serve on the jury.
Yes.
They want to be impartial. But the reality is, when you have a family at home, children, right? It's not just about you anymore. I've had jurors on gang-related cases, gang cases, say right up front, I've heard about the case. I can't sit on this jury. I've got children. They're they were in inner city Atlanta, Fulton County. I don't know if they're being up front in the Diddy trial, but I do know that one juror said, I want off the panel because I'm afraid. I mean, I think they want to do the right thing, but when push comes to shove and it's going home to their children and their family, I don't know. What do you think? This is real.
Sure.
Very often, Bethany, you hear me say, that's BS. That's just in the movies. That's in a book. You know, that's on a TV series. That doesn't happen in real life. This actually happens, I know for a fact.
Nancy, this is no fairy tale. This is no novel. This is a real life story. And yes, jurors want to do their civic duty. I think we all do. But as I tell my patients in my practice, your duty is always to your family first. Above all, your spouse and your children, your job is to keep your family safe. If you abdicate that role, who is going to be there for them? And, you know, not only are the jurors at risk, the judge is at risk. You and I have covered many cases where judges and their families have been targeted. And then what about when the case is over? These jurors forever will be known as the people who either vindicated or convicted P. Diddy. And there are people on both sides that will love and, more importantly, hate them. And finally, Nancy, what about all those celebrities?
Joining us in addition to Lauren Collin at the courthouse, Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, also on the case. Sydney, I understand that first thing this morning, Combs comes in, demands a whole nother pitcher of water. I wonder why he's got dry mouth. But that said, his mother, Janice Combs, also came into the courtroom. In the past, she's been very flamboyant in her dress, but she's taking a page out of Sean Combs' playbook and is dressed like she's going to a funeral, Sydney.
That's right, Nancy, dressed all in black. And Combs' mom isn't the only family member in attendance today. Six of his children are also in the courtroom, and they're dressed very similarly. All of them walked in sunglasses, and all of their clothing is black and white.
They all had on sunglasses in the courtroom?
At least as they were walking in.
I want to go back to the fact that Sean Combs, that we know of, is laying out $10 million for his defense, but jurors in fear. Back to Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. This is a big deal, Sydney Sumner. We know that one juror, as I said earlier, asked the judge, begged the judge to be taken off the jury panel because he's got a family and got, quote, cold feet. But I know the defense struck a juror that said they had seen the Cassie video and that Combs looked angry and hostile. They struck that juror.
Yes, that juror is gone. They commented on that video, said Combs looks angry and hostile. But the government has struck a candidate who said he heard about the Combs case on Joe Rogan's podcast. So we've already had a tit for tat.
As if the jury didn't know about the Tupac Shakur hit, the alleged hit, where multiple witnesses say Combs ordered $1 million hit for Tupac Shakur's head. And he got it. What about the fact that these jurors have seen, they've already seen the Cassie Ventura beatdown video? Listen.
As potential jurors are questioned about their ability to maintain impartiality, an obstacle quickly rears its head. The video of Combs attacking Cassie. Numerous potential jurors have seen the video and formed opinions on it. Of those who have watched it, only a few were able to say they did not think it would affect their impartiality.
The Cassie beatdown video from our friends at CNN. We expect that particular version not to be introduced at trial. Why? Because the defense said it had been sped up and it wasn't in its original pristine form. Well, be careful what you ask, my dear, for you will surely get it. Now, the jury will probably see the entire version in its entirety and in regular motion. Right at regular speed. They'll probably wish they had kept the sped up CNN version. You know, Robert Crispin joining us there at Sean Combs' mansion in Florida. So they know about the Tupac Shakur murder hit, the $1 million hit. They know about the Cassie beatdown video. They've seen it. We've got one juror begging off the panel because he got cold feet. The jury is afraid. They don't care that Sean Combs is spending $10 million on a defense, a slick defense.
Yeah, well, I think what the jury's starting to think is, wow, these are some violent people. What have I gotten myself into? Like I said before, that video was a gift to the prosecution. But what that video does do, it gives a look inside Diddy's real world when he thinks nobody's watching. Nobody's around, and it's just him and his victim, or him and an ex-girlfriend, or him who doesn't agree with him.
Explosive surveillance footage allegedly showing Combs assaulting Ventura has been admitted into evidence.
The jury was finalized in the Sean Combs federal indictment trial at 9:45 a.m. Straight out to Lauren Collins, standing by at the courthouse. Lauren, what happened?
The opening statements for the prosecution said that we are going to hear from Cassie this week, along with another witness named Jane. They said we're going to hear, or we're going to see videos of these freak-offs, and it's going to be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. The prosecution also said things that I had never heard before. They said things like Cassie was forced to allow an escort to urinate in her mouth at one point, and this was per the instructions of Sean Combs. The other witness, Jane, is going to testify that she and Diddy got into an altercation where he allegedly stomped on her face and that she would run into every single room, lock the door, he would chase after her and kick the door down. And it was very graphic.
Straight out to Lynn Shaw, founder director Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sexual exploitation of girls and women. What? It sounds like he's going to college. He's wearing reading glasses. Have you ever seen Sean Combs wearing reading glasses? Oh, okay, that's fake. And the sweater, the white shirt, the khaki pants. What is he, a freshman at Harvard, Linshaw?
Well, he's pretending to be one, Dirty Diddy. Listen, none of us are fooled anymore. None of us, we can all see through this. He's wearing reading glasses. I'm sure it's plastic in the frames or clear glass. Nobody, we're New Yorkers. This is a New York jury. We do not get fooled, especially about this case. He has been for decades now, since the early 90s, on the lips, I'm telling you, of New Yorkers. So many people here know about him already. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. None of this is going to help him. Let us keep the focus on victims, survivors, and not only the alleged ones of this case, but of all victims and survivors of all of this exploitation. Because, Nancy, they are seeking some kind of justice from this case. They want some answers. They want somebody powerful, money, who has been flaunting this in everybody's face, this exploitation. They want somebody held accountable. And I say, Dirty Diddy going down, this is the case.
To Eric Faddis, veteran trial lawyer, former prosecutor, joining us out of Colorado. Eric, I mean, what's next? A wheelchair and a neck brace?
He can't go in there wearing a bejeweled cape or something, right? This is court. And another take on it is that
Faddis. Yeah, we would never want him to reveal his true self. I mean, have you seen the Met Gala pictures? That's the real Sean Combs, right there, with the cape, going down the steps. There you go. Yeah, so you just said, Faddis, he can't go in wearing a cape. Well, why not? Because that's what he normally wears. So you're going along with the eye tricking the mind with him dressed up like a Harvard freshman?
You know, I'm not sure that's what's going on here. Look, he doesn't have his stylist on retainer anymore. That's obvious. But on top of that, maybe this is Diddy's true self currently. You know, he is no longer this high-profile, powerful mogul with all these resources. He is incarcerated. He is facing a serious federal trial. And so his life has changed. His, you know, he has gray in his hair. My understanding is his appearance has been drastically transformed. And part of that could just be a reflection of what's going on around him, of the current state of his life. This is who he is today. That's who those jurors are seeing.
To Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, high-profile psychoanalyst. Dr. Bethany, it seems trite, very trite, that visual tricks are being used on the jury. Khaki pants, and you heard Faddis say he doesn't have a stylist. I bet you anything, he does have a stylist. Those outfits were carefully chosen, very carefully chosen. Have you ever, time immemorial, ever seen Sean Combs in a pullover sweater and khaki pants? Think back. Use that time machine. I mean, all the way back. Whether he's on stage at the Met Gala, walking around L.A., or where Crispin is joining us down his Miami mansion. Never once. These are serious charges, Bethany. I have seen women rape victims, much less with it videoed in front of a whole crowd of people while they're drugged, according to the prosecution, that basically stay indoors the rest of their life. There is a profound impact on rape victims. And there is Sean Combs in a fake pair of reading glasses. What's he doing? Reading Proust? War and Peace? I don't know. It's BS. It's a trick. And there's serious charges here, Bethany.
We know not only is it a trick, but it's manipulative. And we know that if the allegations are true, Puff Diddy is a manipulative person and may have hired manipulative defense attorneys. And jurors are not stupid, Nancy. They do see through this. Jurors can feel bored, offended, devalued, treated like they don't have minds and they can't think. They are not going to like that. And you know what they also wouldn't like, and the defense knows this, to see a man with carats and carats of diamonds around his neck in the form of a cross, who then uses his power to exploit other people. That is a very unsympathetic character, Nancy. And of course, the defense wants to hide that. The other thing is that I think ordinary people tend to look at very wealthy people with the suspicion that maybe, you know, the saying behind every great fortune lies a great crime. The jurors can see that too, that how did P. Diddy get to the top? How did he accrue all this wealth? Why is he hanging around with people who are some of the most vulnerable people in society? So, hey, these defense attorneys have a lot to camouflage, and these jurors are going to see through it. I guarantee that.
Joining us at the courthouse, Lauren Conlon. Lauren, tell me about the challenge Sean Combs' defense team made to these jurors. The defense team, the lead attorney, argues that African Americans were systematically excluded from the jury for racial reasons. What happened?
They started with the jury strikes, and the defense pointed out that the feds or the government struck 7 black jurors out of 9. So the prosecution gave their reasoning behind these strikes, and it was very valid. I mean, some of these jurors, they had said something like, they were going to lose 30% of their income by being on this trial, but that wasn't a concern for them, which actually led the prosecution to say, well, I have questions about their intent here and the fact that they might want to be here for ulterior reasons, or they might have an ulterior motive.
Eric Faddis, this argument is as old as dirt, and it has been addressed by the U.S. Supreme Court in Batson versus Kentucky, B. Brother A-T-S-O-N v. Kentucky. In that case, the prosecutor was accused of striking from the jury, the grand jury panel, you know, of 80 to 100 people, in order to get 12 for the petite jury of 12, striking for racial reasons, which is unconstitutional. Therefore, whenever you strike anyone, anybody, whether they're white, they're black, they're Asian, doesn't matter, you better have a good reason for striking. When I struck juries, typically my defendant was black, my victims, usually there were more than one, were black. There was no real racial undercurrent going on in the courtroom. So I didn't have a lot of Batson arguments against me. But what the state has to do, and I'm sure that they did, you have to write. I would keep the jury list. And what that is a huge printout. I don't know if they do them the same way in your jurisdiction. I'm sure they do, Faddis, where you have the juror's name, whether they're married, maybe where they work, whether they live, to ensure they live in that county or that jurisdiction, or else they're not qualified for the jury. Maybe a little bit more identifying information. But that said, I would put notes, my notes, beside each name. So if there was a challenge, I could say, well, I struck him because he doesn't have a job. And if he can't show up to a job every day, then why do I think he's going to show up to court and pay attention? Or juror fell asleep in voir dire, jury selection. Or, let's see, here's a good one. Juror's husband convicted of rape. If I'm trying a rape case, yeah, I don't want her on. So I would always keep notes, brief notes beside each juror, whether I wanted them or didn't want them, of my impressions of that juror as we were striking the jury, as I was questioning them on voir dire. So Batson v. Kentucky, easy solution to have your reason as to why you struck the juror when the challenge arises. Weigh in on Batson v. Kentucky, Faddis. I'm sure you faced it in court.
Yeah, no, great minds think alike, Nancy. That's exactly how I did it when I was a prosecutor, because here's the thing. Bringing a Batson challenge is kind of a big deal, because it's really insinuating that the other side is kicking somebody off based on their race. That's, you know, inflammatory and problematic. And so you need to have a race-neutral reason for excluding those folks. You know, this wouldn't be the first time that the defense has brought up race. And historically, race has played a role in the justice system. Let's be honest. And so, is the Diddy team sort of using that as one potential argument to this jury in terms of why some rich black man is facing these federal offenses? I think they're going to take that route in some form or fashion.
The trial is just getting started, expected to last 8 weeks, with shocking testimony from accusers and insiders on deck.
Witness three is still missing. The court was informed last week that prosecutors have lost communication and cannot locate her. In fact, prosecutors cannot reach her attorney either, meaning they are not sure victim three will show up in court. The woman does not live in New York. TMZ reports the woman never wanted to appear in court at all, refusing to cooperate and never agreed to testify against Diddy. Prosecutors said victim three would disclose very personal and exclusive details concerning abuse she suffered under Combs.
Plenty of respect to Harvey Levin over at TMZ, but they had to speak to her at some point in order to put her on the witness list. Right now, the state is down a victim. Victim gone. Even though we know at some point she had to speak to the feds, even the lawyer is not responding to calls. Joining me there at Diddy's mansion in Florida, where the neighbors are happy this thing may finally be put to rest, Robert Crispin joining us, Crispin Special Investigations, former Federal Task Force Officer, Department, U.S. Department of Justice. Robert, a witness, not just a witness, but a victim is in the wind. I've had it happen to me on a child sex trafficking case. The victim disappeared and was a no-show the first day and a half of trial. Let me just say, I was out all night, literally with my investigator, going to every flop house in inner city Atlanta, trying to find the girl. We found her and went forward. Then I would try the case all day long. We found her. Not so easy in the Diddy case. This victim could be anywhere in the U.S. and the lawyer's not picking up the phone.
Yeah, we call that being scared to death. That's exactly what that is. This person doesn't want to testify. She's already related to the government that she doesn't want to testify, because if she testifies and he's found guilty, she's damned. If they find him not guilty, she's damned because they let a alleged sexual predator back on the street. It's a lose-lose situation for a victim. And it's very intimidating, even though you're a victim with all the victim's rights and the victim advocates. When it comes down to you getting up and sitting in that chair and raising your right hand and actually telling your story, it's very intimidating. Not only is it intimidating, it brings up bad past in your mind and in your heart. It's really something that a lot of people, they don't want to be
Crispin,
part of anymore.
Crispin,
they just want to go away.
Intimidating? They all know what happened to Cassie Ventura. Okay, and that was at a public hotel. They know what happened to her. No wonder she's disappeared and the lawyer's not picking the phone up. And we know that even from behind bars, prosecutors have produced evidence Combs is tampering with witnesses. Listen.
Prosecutors say even behind bars, Sean Combs has an uncanny ability to get others to do his bidding. Diddy has been accused of obstructing his sex trafficking case by paying off witnesses and even enlisting his own children in a public relations campaign.
You want to tell me he hasn't tried to get to the victims? Listen.
Prosecutors say evidence from Sean Combs' cell shows the accused rapper made relentless efforts from jail to contact potential witnesses, including victims. These methods reportedly involved three-way calls using other inmates' phone access codes, a third-party communication service, and directing family members to contact potential witnesses. The aim, to blackmail victims and witnesses into either silence or to provide testimony helpful to Combs.
Speaking of getting to the victims, straight out to Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Sydney, isn't it true prosecutors are planning to introduce evidence that Sean Combs forced one of his victims to undergo an unwanted medical procedure? I mean, was it an abortion? I don't know. But what can you tell me about that? If he could force a victim to undergo an operation, a medical procedure, What makes the state think he's not trying to scare or intimidate the victims in this case, Sydney?
No, that's right, Nancy. Prosecutors intend to introduce this evidence, and we don't know yet what that unwanted medical procedure was. You're completely right. It definitely could have been an abortion, going along with the fact that Diddy coerces all of these women into unwanted sexual encounters and then doesn't want to keep relationships with them. So prosecutors are introducing this to show that pattern of behavior, to show the level of control that Sean Combs exerted over his victims. So that could be really powerful in front of the jury.
It was exactly 10:20 a.m. this morning that the jury came into the courtroom with Sean Combs standing at attention to impanel and swear in the jury. This is a day that's been long in coming. The state claims that decades of abuse of women and so-called freak-offs have occurred. Finally, will there be justice? This as one of the victims disappears. Can't find her or her lawyer. Straight out to Sydney Sumner, joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. I understand, in light of victim number 3, a no-show, the state has added victim 5 to the roster.
Now, victim 5, who is not mentioned in charging documents, will not be able to just replace victim 3. Judge Subramanian has ruled that they will not be able to include all of the intended testimony, only part of it, because this victim is a similar transaction. This victim will also not be granted anonymity.
We know that one of the victims is not asking to testify under a pseudonym. It's Cassie Ventura. Cassie Ventura is heavily pregnant at this juncture. And her cross-examination by the defense is going to be very tricky. Listen, when you have a pregnant lady, a mom, up on the stand, I mean, you know, how cruel can you be? You can't really, shred her on the stand. That from our friends at Tubi, and of course, Mark Garagos gave me a very vague answer on that. But Eric Faddis, if the defense team comes across as bullying Cassie Ventura, that's going to totally play against Combs.
Well, that's going to rub the jury the wrong way. Absolutely. I mean, not only do you have this superstar already sympathetic victim, but there's a video of her being brutalized, and the person being brutalized is going to be on the stand pregnant telling you how she was verbally and sexually brutalized. And so it's going to be a delicate dance here. The defense has to kind of approach this in a sensitive fashion, but also be firm enough to get their points across. And so the balance to be struck here cannot be understated.
Well, I got to say this to Dr. Bethany Marshall. Cassie Ventura is going to be able to handle whatever they throw at her. She is the one that broke the whole thing wide open when she filed that civil lawsuit. And basically, the feds had a red flag waved in front of them like a bull because it was out there. And they were left looking emasculated. They had done nothing, and here's this video. Let's take a look at the video, everybody. This is coming into court in a different iteration. There you see Cassie Ventura. Oh, and here he comes. Thank goodness that towel didn't slip. She's trying to get away, reportedly, from a freak-off. Now, Garagos tells me it wasn't a freak-off at all, that she was the aggressor. She, Cassie Ventura, is the aggressor in this video. She, according to Garagos, was angry when she saw Combs had gotten texts from another woman. Okay, she looks like she weighs about 100 pounds soaking wet in that video, but yet Garagos said with a straight face, this is from our friends at CNN, by the way, a straight face that she was the aggressor. Now, okay, Dr. Bethany, Garagos, and his daughter is on the defense team, Tenny Garagos, is saying that
You're not seeing what you think you're seeing. She's actually the aggressor in that video. Really? Are they actually going to say that to a jury? 100-pound Cassie is giving Diddy the beatdown?
I sound like a broken record, but Nancy, jurors are not stupid. And jurors can feel like they're being kind of manipulated or mistreated. And I think the defense should be very careful with this line of reasoning. You know, the truth is, you see this young Cassie Ventura running for her life with bare feet. The allegations that he was on the phone doing business deals while he coerced her into having sex with somebody else while he was watching could come out. He kicks her in the back. She has to pretend to play dead. He drags her back down the hallway. And then the jurors see this beautiful, resilient woman who has reestablished her life, probably has a new relationship, is going to create a family. This is a woman to be admired. She rose above the trauma. She did the work, whatever she did to reconstitute herself. She is a very admirable right. witness. So they are going to hang on every single word, Nancy, because most victims do not establish themselves like this.
Bombshell in the courtroom. The defense is actually going to argue that Cassie Ventura was the aggressor, that she was the one giving Sean Combs the beatdown. What juror is going to believe that, especially in light of this?
It's so difficult to reflect on the darkest times in your life. Sometimes you got to do that. I was f***ed up. I mean, I hit rock bottom. But I make no excuses. My behavior on that video is inexcusable. I take full responsibility for my actions in that video. I'm disgusted. I was disgusted then when I did it. I'm disgusted now. I went and I sought out professional help. I had to go into therapy and go into rehab. Had to ask God for his mercy and grace.
Second verse, same as the first. So if he didn't do it, why is he apologizing for it? And that's on Combs' official Instagram. I wonder if they're going to play that. We know the Cassie Ventura tape is in. Straight back out to Lauren Collins standing by. I understand the courtroom holds about 100 people, and I guess it was packed, right? Okay, we'll get the answer to that. You know, I'm hearing Lynn Shaw, Combs in that video stating he wants to be a better person. He's disgusted with himself. He's going to rehab. But yet, that's out of one side of his mouth. Out of the other side of his mouth, he's actually going to argue to the jury that Cassie was the violent one.
Please stop, Nancy, because I'm getting sick. I'm getting sick watching that video over and over again. We have to remember people are visual. Once they see that video, this will stick in their minds. Now, listen, we work with a lot of survivors and victims at the Warriors. What do they tell me repeatedly? When they are being attacked, they play dead. They do not move. They don't want to further enrage that person. They don't want more beatings. So they remain very still. Where is her video of her beating him? That's what I want to know. Why is this playbook the same thing? We're in court a lot. Flipped on putting it on the victim. Oh, it's their fault. They caused me to do it. That's consensual. You know what? The jury, again, like Dr. Bethany said, like I'm saying as a New Yorker, New Yorkers are smart. They're not going to buy this. And you know what? Dirty Diddy going down.
We are in a verdict watch as we wait for the Sean Combs jury to hand down a verdict. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.